Unreliable socioeconomic and political practices have jeopardized our society. In the face of these affairs, which have kept our society at the brink of collapse, information remains the deal breaker. Foundation Radio, in its strive to remain the voice of the voiceless, has embarked on the incisive investigative reporting and analysis to reshape our society and give it a moral face. Join our reporters in the news magazine program News Extra, a one-hour news production intended to uncover striking societal concerns and demystify them. Get the deepest understanding about your economic, political, and sociocultural issues in News Extra.
Listeners of Foundation Radio, welcome to this very special edition of News Extra on FM 100. It is going to be special on at least two counts. Firstly, you are going to be having just three reporters on this edition of your program, a reflection by Francis Ngwaniba on the recent train accident at Ezeka, a special interview with His Royal Highness Dr. Colonel Hans Anago, paramount ruler of Nguo, conducted by Christopher Fogwe. Lanza Vela shall be assessing the country's preparedness to host Africa's female football jamboree and, of course, presents his core board. All of them, however, benefited from the moral support of the entire traditional News Extra crew. Secondly, it is going to be special because it may not last its usual 1 hour. In any case, we are confident that it shall be special because you shall certainly enjoy every minute of it. So stay tuned. I am Mokun Johnny Nelson. Following the ghastly train accident that took place in Ezeka more than 2 weeks ago, it looks like there is no end to what we as a people can endure and do nothing. Those with the power to make decisions are either uncaring or unwilling to provide us with basic necessities to survive. Francis Ngwaniba now reflects on our national inability to rise up and say no, even in the face of countless deaths and destruction.
Soon and very soon, we are going to see them.
Very soon.
Soon and very soon, we are going to see them.
Very soon.
Soon and very soon.
You never really get used to the death of a loved one. The pain reduces but never goes away. Even the comforting words of this song, soon and very soon, we are going to see the king, are just not sufficient to heal our broken hearts when we lose a close friend or family member. We want them here with us and not with a faraway king in an unknown land. I am writing this with tears in my eyes. I did not directly lose any close friend or family when a Kamrai train recently derailed near Ezeka, killing more than 400 people, though government figures want us to believe only 80 people died. All those who died in that accident, both nationals and foreigners in a way, are my friends and family. They didn't deserve to die that way. Nobody deserves to die that way. For obvious reasons, the government will claim as few people died as possible, while the railway company knows the fear of litigation could cause them massive financial loss. So the fewer people who are declared dead in this incident, the better for both of them. The government does not want to expose its dereliction of duty by admitting hundreds of people died. It will mean it has a more difficult question to answer about the way it treats its citizens. Whether 80 or 400 people died does not matter. Some people and lots of them died. Their deaths have created a vacuum that no financial compensation ever can fill.
I am not alone. I see a light. It shines bright. I am going to see my king. I am going to see my God. Hallelujah.
But why did we even get here? Why was the train overloaded? We know who ordered that to happen, but as usual, no government official will take the blame and fall on their sword by resigning. The train accident happened because we don't have a single high standard road network across the country, and this is more than 50 years after independence. Was it so difficult to maintain the footpath linking the economic and political capitals of this country that the road actually split in two? Many people moved over to buy railway tickets after the footpath between Yaoundé and Douala collapsed, which is why they found themselves inside that ill-fated train. I still don't understand why Douala and Yaoundé, the two main cities in Cameroon, are linked by a footpath and not a dual carriageway, as should be the case. Considering that Cameroon provides badly needed supplies to landlocked neighboring countries, including Chad and Central Africa, why don't we have a decent road network in the country? Tax collectors are on the road daily collecting toll gates from motorists, supposedly to repair roads, but nobody knows what exactly happens to all that money. Not surprisingly, a supposed commission of inquiry has been created to look into the causes of the accident and provide possible remedies. But this is just another futile exercise. Millions of CFA francs will be consumed by the commission to come up with recommendations that will be tucked away and nothing ever happens. This has happened before and it will still happen again. Most of these commissions of inquiries are generally useless. Without sitting in any commission, I can safely say the Ezeka accident happened because we have footpaths and not road networks across Cameroon. Our railway tracks, trains and officials are all colonial and need to be scrapped and rebuilt. We need dual carriageways on all the road networks in the country from Boya through Douala to Bamenda, Yaoundé and right up to Maroua. Why do we need a commission of inquiry to tell us what we already know? In most countries, when a major national tragedy like this happens, some high-ranking government officials need to take the blame and resign or get fired. Why does this never happen in Cameroon? My heartfelt condolences to the family and friends of the hundreds of people who lost their lives or were wounded during the train accident. As a people, we need to rise up and say enough is enough. I was a bit amused when some people claimed Cameroon needs divine intervention to resolve the myriad of problems we have in this country. We don't. God helps only those who help themselves. One thing is certain though, soon and very soon, the nightmare we are living will be over without any divine intervention.
I am going to see my God. Hallelujah. I am going to see my King.
Yes, Francis Ngwaniba, it seems a majority of Cameroonians are really wishing that this should happen soon and very soon indeed. In less than a week, Cameroon will be hosting one of Africa's greatest football tournaments, the African Women's Cup of Nations. The tournament will, among other things, serve as a test of the country's ability to organize events of such magnitude. In the following write-up, Lanze Vela fears that little issues that could fail the smooth organization of the tournament arrive and are a sheer consequence of the country's curse of quick fixes.
In less than a week, Cameroon will be hosting one of Africa's great continental tournaments, the Africa Cup of Nations. It will be an opportunity for the country to showcase not only its rich culture and good footballing skills, but that to also tell the world that as a country well known in the sports domain, especially in football, it can also be proud and successful host of tournaments in which it has made its mark. However, it is feared that little issues that could mar the country's image as far as the hosting of this competition is concerned are rife. Albert Kaf had declared the country fit to host the tournament. In view of the organization of this prestigious tournament, the Minister of Transport has signed an order prohibiting the circulation of dilapidating township taxis in Douala and Yaoundé. He also called on drivers of such scrap-like vehicles to rehabilitate them before hitting the roads, but from every indication, this ban just ended like many others, as old-looking taxis are still spotted on the streets of the concerned cities. This greatly raises doubts as to whether our transport sector will be friendly to the upcoming tournament, as every indicator proves negative. Just a few days to the tournament, Cameroonians are yet to know if the minibuses promised by Transport Minister for transportation purpose are or will be available, but from every indication, they are yet to be available. This also greatly indicates that we might have failed as far as transportation is concerned. And away from the transport sector, there are still cries that most parts of Boya, Limbe and Yaoundé, cities concerned with the organization of the event, are still experiencing acute water shortages. Corporations concerned with the supply of the precious liquid have been putting up the charade of trying to assure the population in these areas that in the soonest possible time, every tap will flow, but that assurance is as good as a prank. Visitors shall unavoidably experience dry taps when the time comes, except the unprecedented miracle which we all pray for happens. Since we are good at creating commissions when quick fixes fail us, I think we should be getting set to create a commission to prop into wire transportation and access to potable water where hassle during the tournament, because from all indications, we will certainly fail in these two mentioned areas.
You are listening to News Extra on Foundation Radio, FM 100. We are broadcasting from Bamenda, chief town of the Northwest region of Cameroon. I am Mokun, Johnny Nelson, anchoring. His Royal Highness Dr. Colonel Hans Anago, Fon of Nguo in the Northwest region of Cameroon, served in the Nigerian army and helped fight coup d'etats. He returned to his native Cameroon and was very instrumental in crushing the April 6, 1984 coup d'etat, in which some army officers attempted to topple the regime of President Paul Biya. However, in spite of all these services, the retired colonel deeply feels he did not receive commensurate compensation because, according to him, he was an Anglophone from Bamenda. Due to popular demand, we bring you this edition of Who is Who, where he was special guest to our senior staff reporter, Christopher Fogwe.
Thank you. Hello there, wonderful listeners to Foundation Radio. It's time, once again, for another edition of the program, Who's Who in Business and the Professions on FM 100. Our guest on this edition of the program is a man of impeccable credentials. He has served the United Nations credibly. He has served Africa credibly. He has served Nigeria credibly. And has won his credentials in Cameroon, his homeland. He is a Royal Majesty of the highest order, being one who has been a consummate soldier, a consummate diplomat, and one who fought very, very hard for the independence of Cameroon. He is none other than Colonel Hans Anagher, the Royal Majesty of Ngoland, who is our guest on this edition, in which we have Wally the Tiger at the technical controls. Your Majesty, you are very welcome to the studios of Foundation Radio.
Thank you very much, Mr. Foger.
This is not your first time here. And every time I've been monitoring you with the idea as of getting you here every possible time I can. But all too often, you are moving around, taking charge of your children, 10 of them, only one of whom is at home. So you do a lot of touring.
Yes, certainly, yes.
You're back home at a critical moment in the history of Cameroon, having been in the U.S. for quite some time, and we're so happy to have you and to hopefully go back down memory lane to find out, for those who didn't hear former editions of the program, who you truly are. We'll talk about your life as a soldier, talk about your life as a diplomat, talk about your life on the war fronts, but first and foremost, let us start with what you have done for your own country, Cameroon, as a military man and as a Royal Majesty.
Thank you very much. For my country, Cameroon, I joined the then Nigerian army and was trained in Britain, served with Nigeria, served with the United Nations in the Congo, and finally, I came back and started work February 1967, and I was sent to learn about the Cameroon Army and in a place called Mbanga, not far from Douala. And I was detached there, and my commander was based in Kongsamba. And when the Biafra War broke out, I was detached to monitor the whole of the West Cameroon coast, border with Nigeria. And for 3 months after that, I was sent to France for French training. And thank God I did the 9 months course in 4 months. I started another 9 months course, I did it in 5 months. So in 9 months, I did an 18-month course. Came back, I was transferred to Bangante. And Bangante, they used to call Bangante Katanga. It was the hottest place in Cameroon with the Makiza. And also, thank God, and through my very good military training with the British and the Nigerian Army, we were able to dethrone Wanje, because he escaped from Bangante because of the pressure we were mounting on him. And I was promoted to major and sent to Nkongsamba. And it's Nkongsamba with Enamba, the SDO, that we got one day. And although people did not recognize that I played a very vital, important role in that capture, it didn't bother me because I was serving my God and my nation. So finally, Wanjo was executed by me in Kongsamba when from Douala, Kongsamba, I was sent to Bafoussam, from Bafoussam to Kutaba Training Center. From Kutaba, I went to Douala. And from Douala that time, I was sent to be the first military attaché for Cameroon in the United States of America. I was there for 10 years, and I did a lot for Cameroon, and I did a lot of purchasing and introducing Cameroon to the American armed forces. And there now, there are so many of our young children trained in important schools in America, West Point and Colorado and the Naval Academy, Annapolis, and so on. When I came back after 10 years, I was in charge of intelligence in Yaoundé, from intelligence to commander of the military training schools and centers, Emiak being one of them, one of the first. For 7 years, I was in Emiak, and then moved to Premier Region Militaire. And from Premier Region Militaire, I was made Director of Logistics, where I didn't even serve up to 3 months. Then I went on retirement. So I'm enjoying my retirement now for 21 years.
A well-deserved retirement. But it would appear to me, Mbe, that you had more recognition in Nigeria than you had in your own country, from where you came with experience that was probably not comparable to any of the people who were here.
Thank God I was exposed. I was greatly exposed to the Nigerian army, because I went to the United Nations Congo 3 times. The first time was November 1960, where I was just a young platoon commander with General Gawon as the adjutant of the battalion. It was 4th Battalion Nigerian Army.
So you were fighting side by side by somebody who became a head of state.
Exactly. And when he was head of state, I worked with him for 2 months as our advisor, 2 months.
Then, what exactly happened in Congo?
Well, Congo, the first time we met with the rebels, well, we called them rebels, but they were mercenaries working under Chombe in Katanga. We were to fight with them. They came to attack us, but my platoon, as the point platoon, was in front with the battalion commander, Lieutenant Colonel, and I wanted to fight them. I was ready to fight them. So, but when they raised the white flag, the colonel told me, "No, Hans, please. They've raised the white flag. We should raise ours too." So we did. We raised the white flag. And that was that. And then 13th January 1961, the Congolese attacked us at the airport, at Manono Airport. And with intent that they were going to finish us because we allowed the mercenaries go and so on, that they can fight us with bows and arrows and they will swallow the bullets and what have you. Well, unfortunately, we killed so many of them and buried them at the airport there. Yes.
Because they attacked you first?
They attacked us first, yes. And the company commander, Major H, he was shot at and he lost his private parts.
Now, Your Majesty, I've seen a picture of you sitting side by side with Mobutu and his wife, and you yourself with your wife. But at the same time as you were fighting out there, most Africans would have been on the side of Lumumba, who was the arch enemy, it would appear, to Mobutu. So exactly on whose side were you fighting? And how did you come so close to Mobutu?
No, well, what happened was that Mobutu came to Ibadan as a military commander. He was not yet a president.
Okay.
And before then, I had gone to Zaire, to Mobutu as a military commander, to advise him on intelligence issues. I was sent by the Nigerian Army with a few other officers. I was staying with Mobutu for 10 days and talking only about intelligence. And eventually, when he came to visit us in Ibadan, so we stood up, we were together at the cocktail party in Fort Dan officer's mess with his wife, late wife, and my own wife, too, late wife. We stood and a picture was taken, and my son has been parading in internet with this picture where so many people happen to know Mobutu and I. Yes, that's it.
Tell us about the Lumumba connection.
Well, the Lumumba was killed in Katanga. We were there. We were in Manono when he was killed. And in our unit, we were 12 officers, second lieutenants, six whites, six blacks. Every time we were on duty, we listened to radio, we made small reports, and we were really divided. The six black people were for Lumumba, the six were for Chombe. And eventually, we knew what happened, which just came out. The Belgian officer, lieutenant, who killed Lumumba, I think he confessed. And we knew he was killed. And at the same time that we left in July 61, the Hammarskjöld was shot at. Yes, around the same Katanga. And that Dag Hammarskjöld was the Secretary General of the United Nations. And we were not fighting for it. We went there. The Nigerians proved that they were the best diplomats because we supported everybody who was in danger. And we brought peace and we taught people. Even I was teaching people there how to farm corn and granules and things like that. Because they will tell you the Belgians never taught us. But we taught them a lot. It's a place called Piana, where there is electric generation. And we were there and helping the people in Piana to live a decent life.
Your Majesty, let's go to Nigeria. I think that is one place where your life was very colorful. First of all, one of the people whom you trained in military school was Abacha, the man whom people love to hate.
Yes, since you started with Abacha, that was 61, 62.
Yeah.
I was the demonstration platoon commander. That is the officer teaching basic tactics to young officers when they go to military school. Abacha was one of them. Garba was one of them. Musa Garadua, the senior brother of the president who died in Nigeria. Mm. Tiku from Cameroon was one of them. I was the platoon commander, demonstration platoon commander, and these were my students.
Those were your students. And yes. I brought Abacha up because I know that he was seen as the man teleguiding a number of the coups that took place in Nigeria. But I'm also told that you yourself have been involved in more than not just two coups, maybe three. And you even saw one happen in Cameroon under
your
charge.
Yes, now about coup d'etats, it's true. The first coup d'etat, 15th January 1966, we were in Ikeja barracks of 2nd Battalion Nigerian Army. I opened that barracks. We were from Abeokuta. We moved to that barracks. And I was the officer who went with my contingent, and I planned the occupation of that camp for the 2nd Battalion. Now, when the first coup happened, the night before the coup, I just came back from Enugu. I was doing what we call hand takeover, and I was the chairman of hand takeover between Ejo and Fajui in Enugu barracks. So I came in the night, in my vehicle in the night, official vehicle in the night. And early in the morning, they called me and said, we have a meeting in the CO's office. And CO office was Hilary Njoku. So I could not start my car because it had been lying down for nearly 2 weeks. So I walked to the office. When I walked to the office, I met Irunsi already there.
Irunsi?
Yes, already there. Early in the morning, as early as 5 a.m. And they said, they asked the Colonel Njoku to send the best company commander to Lagos and occupy Lagos. He chose me. So I left. We know the traffic in between Ekeja and Lagos is intense. So I left with my battalion, moved straight away to the parliament, and I dissolved the parliament and occupied it. And my office was in the Senate president's office. And during that period, we checked on Tafawa Balewa. The mate told me who captured, who took him away. Eventually, he was killed. And Ekotebo, the mate told us who captured. As I went ahead, Gawan was following me with a bodyguard. He had just come to 2nd Battalion Ekeja to replace Njoku. And as we were there trying to make my company settle, we had to also capture the railway radio station, because they could make a lot of, they were not able to make any broadcast, because by the time they came, I was already in charge of radio station, Lagos radio station.
But that particular story is going to be quite long. So I want us to really get to the different coups.
Yes, that was the first coup.
That was the first.
I was in charge of Lagos. And I drove away the coup planners and occupied Lagos.
And that means you were in charge of Nigeria, because Lagos was still the capital.
Of course, you could say that. But the unfortunate thing is one of my officers who was in charge of the radio station was killed, was shot. His name was Odu, a Yoruba boy. Mm-hmm. He was shot.
Why did the first coup take place?
That is a difficult story. In fact, I'm writing a whole book on the situation in Nigeria before that coup. It was in such a way that it's the third world problems. Everything involves economy, politics, and education, all. Foreign affairs, the way we were handed independence, we were not prepared for independence. We went in to grab everything, want to get rich, want to have a vehicle, want to have this, and we forgot about
the people.
What is meant by independence? You are independent, capable of looking after your people, capable of doing your own development. So we didn't understand that, and it's still that trend, that spirit is still roaming Africa.
You're still tuned to Foundation Radio in a very special edition of the program Who is Who in Business and the Professions, in which we have as our special guest His Royal Majesty Dr. Colonel Hans Anagu, the Fon of Ngwo in the Njikwa subdivision of the Northwest region. And we have at the technical controls Wally the Tiger and Julius Tendong. It took two to man a program of this sort. And Mukun Johnny Nelson himself is right there as the bodyguard of the house, now that we have the full-time colonel in charge of the station. Welcome again.
Thank you very much.
Now let's go to coup number two.
Coup number two was when I was second in command of 4th Battalion in Nigerian Army in Ibadan. The situation in Ibadan was so serious that any one of the officers who served well with the soldiers in Nigeria had to be there. So Gawan came to me. He was the chief of staff for personnel. He came to me and said, either you go or he goes. But he can't go because he has a serious job in the headquarters. So I was then a brigade major in Apapa with Njoku as the brigade commander. So I took over from Efejuna, one of the 5 majors who mounted the first coup. So I was living in his house and was occupying office. And we so resembled that many a times they confused us. So many a times they thought I was Efejuna who had just come back, I should be killed. Anyway, fortunately, I was not killed. So I, as the second in command in Badan, 4th Battalion, my first battalion that I was sent to when I came back from England. I will not call names this time because some of the things are still secret. So the person who led the coup came to me first and told me what he was going to do. I asked him, I told him, please, it was junior to me, please, don't kill people. Because you've had a lot of killings already in the first coup. Don't kill people. He said, well, when the bullet leaves the barrel, it doesn't know where the bullet is going to. It could kill, it could miss. So we had a meeting at the governor's office. The supreme commander, head of state was there, so many officers was there. I have the last picture hanging in my house in Guo, where we took with some of the officers there that same day. As we were taking the picture, Erunsi was being stolen behind to be executed by the coup planners.
So you took a picture with Erunsi and afterwards
he was
shot?
I didn't take picture with it. I took with the staff, those who were there.
Okay.
As we were taking the pictures, he was being taken away. But I know the officer who led the execution, and I have warned him. I told him that, look, you know that I'm not a Nigerian, I'm a Cameroonian, but you are going to have a lot of bloodshed in this country if you don't take time. I witnessed the one in Lagos, now I'm witnessing this one here. So many people have been killed already. I said, please, think about it, think twice. So he went ahead, and Erunsi was executed. When Erunsi was executed, the soldiers went wild. Nobody to control them. Everybody was afraid. I had to get the soldiers together and disarm them. And then when I disarmed them, they tried to kill me anyway. They thought I was able. They put me in my prison for 45 minutes. But God took me out. And who took me out? The people called Sadana province, the Cameroonian part, that went to Nigeria during the referendum. Mm. They said, to told Nigerians that, if we do anything to our brother, Commandant Major Anago, we are going to fight. So they let me go. And before I could go back, they were already defending my family in my house. That is the second coup. And Erunsi was buried in the bush. We took him and buried him in the army cemetery in Ibadan. And Newe people eventually took him to Newe. So he was buried three times.
Three times buried?
Yes.
Mm. Was there a third coup in Nigeria, or was the next one the one that you prevent?
When the third coup took place, I just finished visiting Gawan, 1975. I went to Doran Barracks. He's been somebody that we work with as young officers. General Gawan. Mm-hmm. When he came here in 2009, he sent for me from the village. There's a little bit of correction there. The third coup took place when I already left Nigerian Army.
Okay.
But I just came from Cameroon to visit head of state Gawan. And somebody hinted me that something was going to happen. And that coup was conducted or led by my classmate, Murtala Mohammed.
Murtala?
Yes. He became head of state. We are classmates right from 1958 in the military school starting from Ghana. So that coup, I don't know much about it, but I know that it happened when Gawan was out of the country. Yes.
And you were one of those who played a strategic part in preventing the coup that was supposed to have taken place in this country.
Yes, the 6th April 84 coup. I'm very proud to say that God led me. I was the only Cameroonian in uniform who had seen a coup d'etat. All the others, nobody had seen a coup d'etat. So I used my experiences from the first and the second coup to bring peace. And I was the commander of the whole Cameroon army. People listen to this. Commander of the whole Cameroon army. There are no two ways about it.
At that critical moment.
At that critical moment. And I what I planned worked. I told them, do this, do that, do this. They listened to me. It worked.
What was happening?
I brought my former secretary general, who became the minister, Mbutu went to his house, brought him to my office, and told him, I have been out for 10 years. Help me as far as logistics is concerned. I sent my personal car to bring Anje Chungi from his house to my office. And Anje Chungi said, Seten Anglo Kima Sove. Oh, yes. Anybody else who makes noise is making noise. There was no general. There was nobody else. It's only me that God sent who knew about coup d'etat to handle the situation in Cameroon. Now, I'm not liked by the Northerners because I stopped that coup d'etat. I'm not liked by the Métis people. They said I was giving what or what to Frundi. Only God knows.
So you deserve a lot more recognition, a lot more thanks, a lot more tributes to what you have done for the country than many of those who are not nearly as patriotic as you, but who are lording it over the lion's share of the cake.
Well, I always tell my young officers that when you have a new appointment, a new position, thank God first. You are serving God first. You are serving your nation. And thirdly, you are serving yourself. I don't serve people. I serve God. I serve my nation. What if no noise they make, they are making noise. I have not gone back. They wanted me back to beg to go back and wear uniform. I wrote even on the thing they asked me that I will never wear uniform again in this army. Because when I left, it was my own desire, because I could not have the Juno people I trained bossing me. I mean, I was born in the daytime. I was born a prince. I'm a very proud person. And I happen to have been to the best schools in the world. So when I do something, I do it well. That is the thing is in me.
It's in your blood, man.
Excellence in me that I should do things right. And God is always carrying me to do those things right.
And that's probably why
God has never failed me.
God has put so much butter on your bread that every time you are touring to see children who are in very strategic locations across the world. We thank you, Lord, for bringing us Dr. Colonel Anagu to be our guest on this edition of the program Who is Who in Business and the Professions on Foundation Radio, in which we have had as technical controllers Julius Tendong and Wally the Tiger. We've had Mukun Johnny Nelson supervising the entire program. And we are going to be having more discussions after this for other programs still scheduled. Until the next edition, this is Christopher Fogwe saying so long and many thanks to our guest, His Royal Majesty, Dr. Colonel Hans Anagu, the Fon of Ngwo in the Njikwa subdivision of Cameroon.
Lanze Vela is back again, but to evaluate people, events, or issues of the week, ending in News Extra's scoreboard.
In this edition of the program, we score the forces of law and order of Bamenda very low for their gross misconduct last Tuesday while the lawyers were protesting. No one would have expected a peaceful demonstration like such to end in violence, but everyone was shocked that the men in uniform acted out of proportion and fired tear gas at the lawyers. We score them extremely low for acting so petty. And we score high the coach of the Indomitable Lionesses of Cameroon, Carl Enongachu, for building a squad that looks combat ready ahead of the upcoming football tournament. Even though it seems too early to start praising him, we think that he deserves that, bearing in mind the kind of squalid conditions he and the girls often train in compared to other African countries. The output of the team in the two past friendly matches proof that he is ready to once more make Cameroonians proud. A very high score for Carl Enongachu.
Hope you enjoyed this special edition of News Extra on Foundation Radio FM 100 in the hope that next week shall be a full house with a full package. Remember this quote from Bob Marley: "You can fool some people sometimes, but you cannot fool all the people all the time." I am yours, Mokon Johnny Nelson. Accept my blessed regard.
Stand up for